second session. Welcome, everybody. This is a pleasure for me to get to do this, so bear with me. We're going to move on to item six, presentations from the public. This time slot is for the information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented, if so desired, by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments, and if you don't do that, we'll remind you. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. I have one blue card from Angela Davis, CAO.
Good morning, Chair Olgren, members of the board, Angela Davis, County Administrator. Before you today, I would like to present to some and introduce to others Mr. Jeff Collins. If you'd like to come forward, please, Mr. Collins. He is the newly appointed Director of Information Technology, and as you are aware, we are now direct service with our IT department is in-house with county employees, and we are overjoyed at the job that they're doing and extremely excited of what the future holds. So I wanted to introduce to you Mr. Jeff Collins. So if you'd like to have words.
Nice to meet all of you today, and nice to be here at the county. You're doing a lot of work and hopefully improving the technology we have here and making it more efficient and working better for all employees and the public.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Any questions about anything?
I believe we've met before. You know, my only concern is cybersecurity.
Yeah, it's an ongoing concern. Obviously, it's a big task to address that, working on that on a daily basis to make sure we're secure and protected. As you see in the news every day almost,
every day.
Companies of all sizes, large and small, are being hit by ransomware attacks. So doing everything we can to prevent that and keep that from happening here.
I'm a vice chair on the Information Technology Committee for the National Association of Counties, and there is a meeting that doesn't go by where cybersecurity is not mentioned.
Oh yeah, it's a huge risk. Like I say, it's all these threat actors from different countries and different places, and mostly it's ransomware today, as you've seen multi-billion dollar companies being hit with that, massive security budgets, and they're not going to do that either. So it's a lot of work and preparation, and it's a constant job to make sure that we're secure.
Just know that I'll be in constant contact with you just to know where we are at any moment in time.
Thank you.
Thanks. Welcome.
Any other questions? No. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Board.
Thank you. Moving on to consent agenda item 7.
Approved.
Second.
Okay. I'm sorry, who was the motion? Thank you. And nothing was pulled, correct? Alrighty, Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Haupt.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsa.
Aye.
And Supervisor Olgren.
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to departmental requests, that's item 8. Item A, community development. Presentation of 2024 year-end updates for the Community Development Department, including the Planning, Environmental, Health, and Building Divisions. Mr. Dean.
Good morning.
Wow.
Happy New Year.
You can just stand normal now.
You can stand normal.
Back away from the mic.
Somewhat intimidating.
Yeah. Amanda, can you bring up the first number one power presentation, please? Okay, Rick Dean, Community Development Director. Been quite a year, we'll say that, for all of us, I think. Personally, this has been the most challenging year for me and our department, and since my career here at the county. Before I jump into a little review on our financial situation, I'd like to speak about community development in general. And just the pride I have with the team and the family that we have there. And I think you can share that pride also. And it's really been a challenging year. Not so much, you know, we had the dam removals going on, illegal cannabis cultivation, fire cleanups, water wars, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all those things, it's just shoot yourself in the foot get up, suck it up, get the work done. You know? I think more this year, just the personal overlap that we had with, you know, our personal lives and our work life. Right out the gate, January, code enforcement Ottenberg hit the floor, cardiac arrest. Our family, staff, led by Andrea Fox, jumped on him, did CPR for 3 minutes, brought him back to life. And the whole time frame with him dealing with that, obviously he had an issue with his heart, right? So it wasn't until May that we actually got him attention and had that dealt with. Very impressed. Lisa Flagg is the heart. She's our office manager. Made sure that everything's attended to. John's house was clean. He had food. We went to his house on 3 events where he is unconscious. Got him to the hospital. Advocated for him to get to Medford, get the services that he needed. Very grateful he's here today. That was just one big challenge we had. February, a little cocktail fireball goes into the basement of our building. Damaged 50,000 records of our building records. It's made it more difficult for us to operate. Staff has been cramped in space for almost a year now. Getting to know each other quite well, so to speak, face to face. We had 3 or 4 people per office carrying on. Very, very proud of the team. Very little whining going on. Basically sucking it up, getting it done. Performing what we do. Got our building staff. I'm basically picking tables in the front lobby. Okay, just business as usual, carrying on and get the job done for us. With that, good things come out of that. Rick Florendo is taking the opportunity to mentor 3 of our staff and get through our RHS exam. So this year, Coleman Fitzgerald, Shan Vanella, and also Shaylin Dewey have all passed their RHS exams. Are moving forward. So now we have 1 remaining staff to get that goal done. So that's been a benefit. You have an audience right there, shoulder to shoulder, so you can communicate. So hats off to Rick for that. Jenny Monroe with our office, cancer situation, battled for quite a time. Very proud of staff, stepped up, got her, you know, leave time that she desperately needed. It's all donated right out the gate. And again, Lisa Flagg at the helm, making sure that she had daily checks on, had food, so forth. Just all in all, very proud of our team for what they do internally with life and so forth. Crazy things go on. Continue, right? One of our inspectors was bit by a dog on a walk. And we do the rabies program, of course, right? So we're waiting for the bike car to come, but went to the city where we go. And then now, Andrea Fox, just last week, slipped, fell, broke her ankle. Life is life. Life goes on. It overlaps with the whole thing that we have. So just want to wrap that up, and I think you know, I'm very proud of the character and the perseverance of our team that we have, and I think you can be proud of them as well. Now we can move on to the financial business that we have. Go to the next slide, please. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail with this, but I'm going to go through each of our divisions, give you a picture financially of where we're at. This first slide is basically over a 6-year time period of revenue versus expenses that we have. Next slide, please. This is all basically relative to the general fund, right? So you're aware of where we're at, where we are at. Both the building division and also the planning division are subsidized, so to speak, by the general fund. Currently with building, it's 35% subsidized. Fees take care of the remaining 65%. And just want to throw out there their challenge to come up with an additional 5% reduction in our budgets due to constraints that we have countywide. In the case of the building department, As you know, it's been kind of a battle getting to where we are currently with service of the public, right? So we did not want to back off on staff, right? We just finally got to a point where now, thanks to CEO's investment 2 years ago and the board's, we are fully 100% caught up. And if you come into our department with a complete set of plans, you know, 2 weeks out the door. So thank you very much for that. It's been huge for us internally, but also for the public that you serve. So what we did to accomplish that 5% is we unfroze the ICC department portion of this fee structure to kind of build that up. And Clint Shock, you can elaborate on that more if you have any questions. Moving on to environmental health. Next slide, please. Environmental health is not part of the general fund. It's funded by fees and also realignment dollars. Basic graph that's your disposal, you can have that for reference, right? Again, expenditures, revenues. Next slide, please. This is basically the last 6 years as far as the contribution of the vehicle registration funds that come in through realignment that go to our department. So in general right now, I would just say that environmental health, our budget is sound, primarily because we haven't been able to fully staff our team. Pre-2008, 1993, when I started here, we had a staff of 10, 9 staff plus a director. Currently, we're 5 staff and a director with twice the workload. Environmental health is most impacted by unfunded mandates from the state by far. And without exaggeration, we're doing twice the work that we did prior to 2008 with nearly half the staff. So this is one area that we definitely need to get short of. Okay, next slide, please. And this is a reference here again. So this is not, again, tied to general fund. It is fee coverage versus realignment dollars. There you see the graphs. Okay. Planning division. Planning is most affected by the general fund. Again, you can see the numbers there, graph basically. Next slide, please. There has been a reduction in percentage in the general fund contribution. And basically, to meet the goals for the 5% reduction, we eliminated the CDBG program manager position to accomplish that. So I'll just say that you know, across the board, and this is all up to your decision and discretion and direction, but fees for planning have not been completely addressed since 2011. And I know we've had conversations about addressing that once the general plan update is done. So we can maybe take a look at that and at your direction we'll move forward there. But the percentage has been reduced by 7% over last year. So that's where we're at, basically, with the financial picture of community development. Following, we will have a presentation from planning and in building and in environmental health to more details on the divisions. I'm going to go ahead and hand this out, though, just as I
preempt for Mr. Shopkins' presentation.
Okay. I'd like to introduce Ms. Haley Lang with the planning department.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Planning Director Haley Lang. Next slide. So as the planning director, I oversee two divisions, the planning division and the code enforcement divisions. And so currently on staff, we have 2 senior planners, an associate planner, a planning permit technician, and a planning commission secretary. On the code enforcement side, we have a code enforcement supervisor, two code enforcement officers, and a code enforcement analyst currently. Next slide. For the planning divisions, you can think of the main duties being either current planning or long-range planning activities. And so current planning activities that we conduct, include development projects on private property, right? Use permit, zone changes, boundary line adjustments, Williamson Act, those types of projects would be current planning. Our long-range planning activities include update to things such as the general plan, zoning ordinances, and other, internal programs and policies to help the development, within the long game of Siskiyou County. Next slide. In 2024, we received 89 applications. This is somewhat a little bit less than in the past. We normally were averaging at about 100, but I would say staff right now is working on more complex projects that are taking a little bit more time to get out. For example, CEQA environmental concerns that staff is working on, or drilling down project descriptions with the applicants, or dealing with some other project issues related to that. Commonly in the past, most of our applications are related to boundary line adjustments, ag preserves, considering we've been focusing on that, program, and use permits. Next slide. Code enforcement. So our code enforcement team is always super busy. They always handle a lot of cases. And so just to summarize, there were 7 land use cases, 31 planning cases, 241 building cases, 12 hazardous waste cases, and 165 cannabis cases. Next slide. There were a lot of big projects that we worked on, one of them being the vacation rental ordinance update. I know at the board level we met a lot going over that, and so that is something that we completed in 2024. We also adopted the housing elements. That was also a long planning process that we got done. We continued working on the 2050 general plan update, so that's scheduled to be complete and adopted in 2026. And then we began working with JH Ranch and their plan development project. So that's in the queue and something you guys will be seeing in the future. Next slide. Williamson Act, so we have 445 total contracts within the county, 70 are multi-owner contracts, and a total of 414,000 acres are under contract. There were 13 contract amendments totaling at about $15,275 in fees. 19 were processed and approved, 2 are currently on hold with issues they need, boundary line adjustments, and 2 are still in process. 8,853 acres were issued a notice of non-renewal, and 230 acres were added into existing contracts. Next slide. So our SMARA program, our Surface and Mining Reclamation Act Mining Program, also a really comprehensive program within our division. We currently have 25 mine sites. 1 was abandoned and required county closure. 2 are in process of reclamation. 3 new sites are in process. And there are 3 proposed amendments or expansions that we are currently working on. And the annual fees billed is about $35,000. Next slide. Well, we have 1 more slide left, so I will just summarize that verbally. And so I was going to discuss what our 2025 focuses are this year. There it is. As I mentioned, the JH Ranch plan development, we're working on that with the applicants, and so I'm hoping to take that to actually Planning Commission in February or March. Still working on the general plan update, and I'm going to continue staff training, and I will be studying for the AICP certification, so planner certification. So need many years of experience and education to get that done, so I'm finally ready for that and have some time. last, we're going to be working on updating required ordinances specifically for our housing element implementation. We have a slew of things that we're mandated to update within our zoning code related to housing, so you'll be seeing a package of that, you know, in the next few months for adoption. So other than that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Yes.
Chair, thank you. With regard to the SMAR program and the permitting, it looks like it's $1,400 a year. Have we gone up from, were we lower than that? I know we started out high and we were able to bring it back, but is it creeping up again?
It's not creeping up again. Rick and I were actually looking at this the other day, and it seems like in 2016 we had a fee schedule update specific to SMARA amendments at the 1400. So that's what we're currently working with, but we have no intention right now, at least, to increase those fees.
Okay.
So
thank you.
Yep.
So the Women's in Act, I know that's far longer process, but I thought it was going to take time along before you get to steps.
You know, Bernadette's done an amazing job, obviously, focusing on this. Considering we have, you know, 70 multi-owner contracts and that we survey every other year, I would assume maybe the next probably 3 or 4 years is, you know, we'd see a huge decrease in that multi-owner contract, because that's kind of when we get the information, right, is with the voluntary surveys, so we can start working with folks and contacting folks. And that's how we've been managing the program. Unless, of course, there's like a code enforcement violation or someone calls or there's concerns or they're working on another development project, then we'll kind of handle the Williamson Act issues with that. But that's what I foresee as it being, you know, kind of drilled
so
down.
We had some that we non-compliance and those kind of things. Are we able to quantify what that is going to do? Because that would be an increase.
Back to that one slide with the acreage, that would tell us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see here.
With 8,800 acres, it's going to be...
Yeah, so, you know, just north of 8,000, almost 9,000 were issued non-renewals, right? So that's a long process as well,
sure.
Right? It's a 9-year process, so folks have, you know, 9 years either to go back and come back into the program, or after that,
sure.
With the incremental taxes that occur over the 9 years, is that's when it would be back and, you know, kind of general
taxing. But we don't really quantify that at this time. I mean, that's probably into the minutia of what...
Yeah,
yeah,
right. And we'd have to work with the assessor's office, and
okay.
we totally could get you that number, but yeah, that's not something I have.
I don't think it's relevant. I think it's really making sure people are compliant from my perspective.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you give me some sense of the timing for the day transfer processing?
Yes. So they submitted a plan development. So that's a, because they have a, you know, plan development zoning, and so how our code works is they have to do a zone change in addition with a use permit, similar to Mount Shasta, how that kind of function worked, because it's a large project and there's multiple different activities occurring. That's why those both tandem applications are being processed. I've been obviously working on the project and working with, you know, Kip and Rob from JH, and so I'm planning to take it to Planning Commission. I'm hoping for February, if not March, and so depending on how that goes, with approvals and things like that, then, you know, the board would see it shortly thereafter. I will say the intent of these applications is to bring the property into compliance. There's nothing being expanded, no new occupancy, so it's really just to create baseline of what's been occurring, to formalize that so we are able to work with them on potential expansion in the future.
What CEQA process are we looking at?
So for this, because it's baseline, we're looking at a categorical exemption.
Okay.
So, because there's nothing new being proposed, it's just, you know, a compliance thing.
Okay. Thank
you. Yep.
Supervisor Harris? Can you give us a quick update on the general plan? How's that moving along?
Yeah, so moving along just fine. As you were all involved in the joint meeting regarding the visioning and guiding principles, we took that back as staff. And, you know, took that input and feedback, brought that forward through the internal tag for the revised guiding and visioning guiding principles. That's going to be discussed at the January Planning Commission meeting this month, and then that recommendation will be moving forward to the board in February. And then after that, the next kind of main focus would be zoning code updates and the actual preparation of the elements. And so, you know, after the vision and guiding principles approval, which I'm slated to happen occur in February. That would kind of be the next step for the project.
Is there more public outreach going to happen with that? Are there more public meetings?
Yes, there definitely is going to be more public meetings. We have nothing scheduled yet. But also during this process, we're going to be beginning the notice of preparation process for the EIR. So that's very, very involved with the public. And so that's probably what we'll see next in terms of, you know, scheduled public hearings and public meetings to get the public's input on that piece.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anything else from the board? Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Good morning, Board and Chair Ogren. I'm Glenn Shockensey, Deputy Director of Building, here to provide my yearly update on the Building Department. Next slide, please. Currently, Building Department has 5 full-time employees, Deputy Director of Building, Building Plans Examiner, Building Inspectors 3, and 2, Building Inspector 2. All of which are ICC certified inspectors. We have 1 extra help retiree that fills in the gaps on some specialized projects that we have. And we are currently engaged in retaining this established staff so that we can continue to provide this service to the county. Next slide, please. Just go over briefly this, the department task. Plan review and approval of current code compliance, permit issuance of reviewed projects, inspection of permitted construction projects throughout the county, answer code and permitting related questions to the public, provide technical input on various high profile issues throughout the county, which include ongoing fire rebuild efforts, the dam removal project, which is thankfully winding down. We're mostly dealing with res. Assist code enforcement. Haley brought up how many building code enforcements they have. We assist them with those, send our inspectors out and give input on that, and assist, like I said, planning with on-site inspections of their building code issues. Next slide, please. This is a year-over-year of how many fees we've collected in the building department. I just want to point out that that first one, it doesn't really represent it. It's only a $49,000 difference between last year and this year, which I remember Supervisor Kopseff had asked me to look into my crystal ball and foresee what we were going to do in the building department during that trying year, but I'm happy to say it was only a $49,000 difference. Permits issued. We're actually, or the valuation is $23,583,000 compared to last year, which was $27,047,000, mostly because last year we had a lot of commercial projects. I think you're aware of Fish Hatchery, SPI, just to name a few, so we didn't have that shot in the arm this year. Permits issued this year was 542 compared to last year of 331. So we actually issued more permits, and the inspections on that are lagging. So that's where that stands. Next slide, please. Building inspections, year over year, 2024, we did 3,421. 2023 was 3,231. And 22 was 2,878 inspections. So we continue to climb yearly. Next slide, please. This is just a quick slide to show to date the permit fees that billing has waived due to the fires in the county. That's strictly the amount of permits. It doesn't represent, you know, time to drive down to the different sites or the vehicles and gas that are associated with that. So that's purely a dollar count of permits waived. Next slide, please. So as usual in building, we have permits that are ready to be issued that aren't picked up. So again, I'm showing this slide to say there's 44 that are ready to be issued, haven't been picked up by permittees. Permit value is approximately $41,000, and the valuation is close to $3 million. Next slide, please. And we're going to go through some permitting totals. Single-family dwellings, 58 submitted, 30 issued, and 30 have been finaled. Residential alterations, 304 total, 117 submitted, 107 issued, 80 finaled. Next slide, please. I think we skipped one. There we go. Accessory buildings, 178 total, 67 submitted, 65 issued, 46 final. Commercial, 86 total, 50 submitted, 19 issued, and 17 final. Next slide, please. Electrical service, 131 submitted, 105 issued, and 84 final. ADUs, new and conversions, total of 8. 4 submitted, 3 issued, 1 final. And down at the bottom is where I've listed projects that their permits expired, but we issued permits to complete based on the permittee providing a letter of the consequences surrounding their expired permits. So in that, we've issued 27 that kept going. Next slide, please. As Rick mentioned, we have ongoing challenges with being displaced because of the arson fire, trying to locate old documents to allow people to complete their permits has become a challenge, and working around our piles of plans and permits everywhere is a daily challenge. And ongoing wildfires, which we're hoping to catch up on a lot of that, get people back into their homes. Next slide, please. Goals for 2025, continue to maintain the current qualified staffing levels that we have so that we can service the county in a timely fashion. Maintain average permit plan check review times. Currently, we're 2 weeks. So if everything is in order and everything's submitted, it goes through the proper steps of planning and, you know, fire everybody that looks at it. It's 2 weeks to get it out the door. And ongoing implementation of our county pre-approved plans. Next slide, please. Which this is an example of. This is going to be the first one of the county pre-approved plans that will be finaled. This is out in Scott Valley, I believe, right?
Correct, yes.
So we're kind of proud of that. One's built. Other ones are in various stages of completion, but this one will be final shortly. And that concludes my presentation. Anybody has any questions?
Questions from the board?
To the chair. So a while back, and I know when you say if everything's in order, it's a 2 week turnaround for permitting. What's the lag time between, I guess, when someone first brings in a permit that may not have everything? Is there a lag time there that keeps that 2 week window from happening? Are you with me?
Yeah, generally there isn't. We get it in, goes through planning, we triage it. A couple of us look at it and say, let's fast track this one forward. It looks like everything's here. We can get this one out the door. They have everything needed. And then we'll let people know during the process, hey, can you get us this upgraded truss couch or whatever? So we're constantly trying to move the project along as much as possible.
So if someone provides a project and puts an application in for a permit, can it get... I don't know, new regulations come each year. does the person in 2020 that may, I'm just going to use that as a number, but that has submitted an application that may still be en route because of not having X, Y, or Z, do they get stuck with the new regulations for 2024?
No, it's under the permit they submitted under.
Okay.
That's the one we're checking under. Okay. Yeah, we don't kick it in and close and they went on them. It just goes, whatever permit was in effect when they submitted the project, that's what we go by.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe just a projection going forward. I think last time I spoke with Rick Dean, the Slater building had kind of crested. And we may be on the back side of the number of submittals.
Right.
Where are we with McKinney going forward? Do we anticipate a big swell again, or?
I haven't seen a lot submitted on McKinney, so I'm not sure what the situation is there with people getting permits in. I don't know if they're what they're waiting for.
I know Slater, there was a 2-year lag time with the insurance.
Correct.
Anyway, I'm just trying to look what workflow going forward is going to be. And
but as usual,
might affect the permit time.
As usual, with all the fires, we expedite the fire projects. So we put them to the front of the line and try to get them back into their residences as soon as possible.
Okay, I appreciate that. I also have businesses that are trying to conduct business outside the fire footprints, too.
Well, just real quick, 2 weeks seems pretty darn good.
It is.
For as long as I've been on campus in Wisconsin, I don't think that we've ever been that way.
Right.
So kudos to you on that.
Thank you. Thank you. CAO and all of you for your support in that, getting that done.
How many inspectors do you have out actually inspecting projects?
We have three that are full-time inspectors, and then the rest of us can fill in as needed. So I was out there before I used to do it, our plan checker, so all of us can go out and do it as needed.
And what's the time frame on an inspection when a property owner, project owner calls and says they're ready for an inspection? Are there cycles that you go out on? And
so it's based on the days. We have routes that we do. So certain routes are on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Or Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Other ones are Tuesday, Thursday. And if they call in their inspection by 7 o'clock, we get to it. 7 a.m., we get to it that day.
So there's really no lag time.
There is no lag right there. Yeah.
Great. Well, we all appreciate the work that you've done to make sure this has progressed over the last few years. We know that there's been some issues, and we really appreciate the work that your department's put into fixing that.
Appreciate it. Thank all of you.
Thank you.
All
right. Thank you. Rick's coming back.
Good evening. Mr. Wessel has a previous commitment. He'll be able to be here to represent environmental health, so I am filling in for that. Just to back up before I proceed, Supervisor House question with the Slater fire and so forth. Long process, you know, it's been over 4 years now. There's been 43 homes rebuilt out of 265 lost. Not great numbers. That said, McKinney, we've had three. Now, settlements are starting to come in with McKinney fire now, so expecting to get an uptick there with McKinney rebuilt too. So, yeah, long time to heal from these fires, for sure. Okay, environmental health. Kind of touched on this earlier with the staffing levels. Environmental health has hit the hardest again from unfunded mandates and so forth in a work building. Our staffing levels are 65% what they were historically. Needs to be fixed. So, let's just say that. Next slide, please. Most of you all know what we do. This is a list here. I know last year we spent too much time yakking, so I'm not going to get too carried away with it. If you have any questions on what we do, we're here to answer those for you. Next slide, please. Consumer protection. It's done a bit of a job this year. Last year we had 820 inspections conducted. This year, 1,163. We have 371 food facilities, restaurants that is, 161 temporary food permits. Those are folks that go out and do a portion of events, and et cetera, et cetera. CFO, Scottish Food Operations, we have 39 of those that we inspect, 53 events. That's probably the largest thing that's grown over the years within our county are the events that we have. And we try to get more attention on them. Obviously, there's a large population that's served at those. There's a higher potential for things to go wrong. And staff has done a good job picking that up and actually committed to going out there on the weekends and doing with inspections and trying to make sure that we're in good standing with those. Pools and spas, 47, body art, and we also do medical waste inspections and so forth. Next slide, please. CUPA program, what does that stand for? Certified Unified Program Agency. Makes absolutely no sense. Doesn't tell you exactly what it is at all. Not even clear. Another acronym developed by the state of California. Thank you very much. Within the Waste Management Unit Program, cover the landfills, rush response, fire cleanups, illegal camps, cultivation, etc. I want to give a little shout out to Shannon Vanilla this year. We were tasked with cleaning up the head fire, which was a learning experience for certain. This was the first fire that the state basically put on the owners of the county to fulfill. And it'd be nice to say it was all great and everything. Still very expensive to do because we're within the parameters of the state in order to get reimbursed by the state. So we still have to use the same 210-page contracts and so forth to get folks on board to do the work. Big learning curve there for myself and team to try to work through those contracts. And thank you very much for helping us do that, Angela Davis. Because did not meet the time frame that I expected things to happen with. Once we did get everything in line, it went pretty darn well. And Shannon did a fantastic job dealing with the personnel that's on the ground. I'll say that. It's always a challenge. We have folks that are in a decimated situation, and we're trying to work through this process with them. So, next slide, please. Currently, we have 500 CUPA facilities. This is one area that has grown significantly within the county. When I was a manager of the hazmat, we had under 400. A lot of this is due to cell sites coming in all over the place, right, and associated with hazards, battery backup, power backup, propane tanks, etc. So that's increased our inspection load quite a bit there with that. 25 emergency responses this year. Keep knocking on wood. We haven't had any big events, right? Most of these have been diesel spills, trucks, these things have been easy to manage. Just keep the fingers crossed there with Brian Cignoni, and hopefully we'll stay on that trend. It's been interesting that I think the major change with the driving hours of folks that are on the big rigs, they can't go over 8 hours at pool or go to sleep, so there's a lot less risk there as far as accidents go, and more cognizance with the materials they're handling. So just over the last 20 years, been a huge improvement and reduction in our need to respond to those types of events. Head fire cleanup, we had about 350 hours committed to that this year, with cannabis support, with pesticides and so forth, the Sheriff's Department, code enforcement, 150 hours committed to that. Next slide, please. Land use, obviously, on some septic wells, water systems. Hit that slide button again, please. There you go. Okay. Little recap on what was done out there. I had 104 versus 136 last year as far as septic permits goes. Well, 119 versus 98 last year. Varieties are up there, domestic wells, ag wells, water wells, monitoring, etc.
We have 41 water systems that we sample quarterly. And just a heads up, there's a move at the state level to take this back and put them under the state purview, which currently our fees are about $275 per year. And what I'm seeing on the state level would be more like $1,500. So,
why is the state taking them back?
I have no reason to.
Well,
aren't
they
going to
pay for them? That's the
No. No, it'll go to the consumer and we'll be hearing about it. Just another.
Is it law or is it just agency driven?
It's agency driven, from what I can see. Yeah, MoDoc is the first town that's getting hit right now, and they're knocking on our door currently. So we'll keep you apprised where that goes. In closing, off of this subject, I just want to say, planning department, Haley Lang's doing a fabulous job there. James Phelps is doing awesome for us, both supporting planning and code enforcement and every other little thing that he has brilliant mind. Very sound planning division now, I think, from my perspective, of where it's been for the last 30 years is the healthiest that it has been. Building department, as you know, on Chocancy, his team, Sean, you got Seth doing plan checking. You know, we still have bugs to work out, as always, but great improvement, very solid there with the building. Environmental health needs to be shored up. We have difficulty hitting our special requirements with the addition of the fires, the cannabis, all the other unfunded mandates that keep piling onto that division. And need to have that shored up, quite frankly. If I had one wish, and I know we've been working on this hard, is to somehow get some support, county council, halftime position within code enforcement. Historically, and this is prior to the cannabis, right? We have difficulty with camping primarily and egregious sites where we go out of code enforcement. We have our process, citations, and get to nowhere, get to an end where we're not getting cooperation. And we need to have follow through for civil action. And it hasn't happened historically. Something I think that for your community development department and code enforcement would be a good investment for you to have in place. With that, I will thank you very much. All in all, grateful for this year. It's been a disaster, but we still have Sean Burke standing. We still have Jeanne Lowe standing. We're all basically healthy. Life gets crazy. As we hit our age, our parents start going sideways, have all kinds of things to deal with there that detracts from our day-to-day work. And all in all, I'm just very pleased and grateful, privileged to have your team in community development and the status that it is in. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions?
Thank you.
I just wanted to make a comment. I work with your department, your staff, more than any in the county. And the citizens get more than their money's worth out of your department. You're always responsive. Your staff are responsive. They're always timely getting back to me. I know you take a lot of flack from the public because it affects people's personal lives. But truly, the professionalism in your department is admirable. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I would reiterate that and say that every time that I call, I get nothing but a quick response, or as quick as you can. and that's directed at Haley. And you actually care. You really, really care about your community and the work that you put in, and your family slash team really genuinely cares about the work you do and the community you live in. And I really appreciate that, and I think your community does too. So thank you for what you do. Moving on. 8B, County Administration Discussion and Possible Direction Regarding Specific Level of County Assistance to Incorporated and Unincorporated Jurisdictions with Regard to Warming and or Cooling Shelters in Various Areas of the County.
Good morning, Chair Ogren, Angela Davis, County Administrator. As we are all very much aware, Siskiyou County has weather events throughout the year. And with those weather events, there may be a request from incorporated cities from the county to assist with establishing, implementing warming or cooling centers. And so when it comes to the unincorporated areas, as we know, that is our sole responsibility. And if we were to receive a request, up until this point, we have not received one request for the unincorporated areas. But if we were, we would then, of course, handle that accordingly. So today I am seeking the board's direction specifically for those requests that may come forth from an incorporated city requesting the county to assist. And that could include anything from a location to staffing to supplies to building up to tearing down. It's just a variety of tasks that may be needed. And I just would like to have clarity for both those that are requesting and then for county staff so that we understand exactly what the pleasure of the board is when it comes to warming and cooling centers with the incorporated cities. Also today, I do have Trish Barbieri, who is the Director of Social Services, Susan Cervelli, who is the Deputy Director of Social Services, Ryan Shinoni, who is the Director of Emergency Services, and Sarah Collard, who is the Director of Health and Human Services, that are here available. They are the boots on the ground, literally, specifically Ms. Cervelli. So if there are any specific questions that you have, I'm sure that they will be able to assist if I'm unable to do so. So with that, I turn it over to the board for any questions, comments, and as I stated, I'm just seeking direction from the board so that we can have clarity moving forward.
Any questions from the board?
So, I get the unincorporated part.
Correct.
But give me, I guess, a backdrop of what we've done for the cities in the past. Isn't there kind of a protocol? It isn't like you call up and just say, we need help at the city of Mount Shasta. How does it work?
Well, currently we have an informal process. So, and that's, if the board chooses to assist the incorporated cities, then we would then implement, I would come back to the board with an actual formal plan that would establish those boundaries and those roles and responsibilities. Currently, if a city has a request, the internal process is to actually reach out to our Director of Emergency Services, Brian Shinoni, who then reviews the weather to determine whether or not the benchmarks are being met, because there are certain benchmarks that have been, again, it's informal. And so if those benchmarks are met, then that is then approved at that level, and then the discussions occur about what level of assistance. The city may need a location, or they may need staff, they may need supplies, or like I said, the breaking up or the shutting down of the warming or cooling center. So it's all over the map. And so, again, it's pretty muddy, and that's where I'm seeking clarity because of the vast array of services that we have provided in the past. For a typical four-day shelter, it ran approximately $11,000, and I'm not trying to put a number on it, but just so for you to understand what services may be required.
And are the services for residents?
It is posted throughout the county that a warming shelter or a cooling shelter will be open. I probably would seek assistance from Susan Cervelli to determine the screening of those that come into the centers. From what I understand, it can be anybody that shows up during those times that have been noticed. But I'll have her verify that.
Good morning. Susan Cervelli, Deputy Director for Social Services and Shelter Coordinator for Human Services. When we post a warming center, or the cities that request the warming center or cooling center post, it is open to the community, any person that is in need. In the sense of the warming centers, the majority of our population that comes in could be classified as our homeless population who seek those warming centers. But it also depends on power situations in the local areas. If we have an area without power, we've often had residents that come in because they do not have secondary or wood heat sources for their house. And for the cooling centers, it tends to be a general population when we've had to operate those. We're much fewer that we operate. Usually the county libraries and other facilities take on those daytime duties because they're already open. But we do see more of a senior population that perhaps don't have air conditioning, are just trying to get around town and need a cooling spot to stop in those situations.
So, for instance, we don't go into, you know, the city of Mount Shasta or the city of Wheaton and just say, we're setting up a warming or cooling center for you.
No.
Okay. No. It would require the cities coming to OES, I would imagine.
Correct. Okay. The informal process currently is that we would receive a direct request from the city itself, a representative from the city, preferably the city manager or whomever may be in charge at that time. And that request would go directly to Mr. Shinomi, who would then establish the weather system that we are experiencing to determine if the benchmarks are being met.
Thank you. Correct.
That was a question. So looking at the past, I would say that none of the government buildings that have been utilized in the past are proper for this. It required, technically, I would say, hazmat cleanup afterwards. Very inconvenient. There's potential access to health records. Something that I've been looking at is, you know, I want solutions to this stuff. I'm looking long term. I know I spoke with the city of Waireka. Looks like they have a church on board for temporary. But currently, you know, one thing I'm looking at is with the Senate Bill 1, the mental health bill that was passed, there's a $6.4 billion bond posted for infrastructure. You know, while I'd like to see a mental health and rehabilitation center, would this infrastructure bond be a possibility for developing some sort of mobile warming shelter as part of that system? That way we're not coming out of pocket on it, but we're defeating an issue that this was designed for.
Correct. And we did have, at least I am aware of, one warming center that was located at a county building. And you're correct, there was some cleanup that was involved after post-center closure. With regards to SB1, we can definitely look into what the viability is for a mobile warming and cooling center within the unincorporated areas. Because then we would have to, of course, and you know this, that we would have to work in conjunction with the cities to determine their needs or determine their desire to have us entering into the cities to hold a warming or cooling center that is mobile. So we can definitely take a look at that and research those, that feasibility of that for sure.
Ms. Cervelli, I would request that you come up and address the county specifications about having that in the county building, because we've already addressed that before. As far as housing people after hours and the youth, etc.
There's a lot of different variants. Also defer to Ms. Warmer if she'd like to add anything, or Sarah Collard. For human services, some of the barriers to using our buildings is that our buildings are already a 24/7 facility for adult and child protective services. We are 24 hours on call, and at any time that we take a youth into care or an adult into some type of protective services, we may need to utilize our office for temporary location and assessment, interviews, and other things. Therefore, if we had multiple public persons and community members in seeking at some type of warming or cooling center, there could be severe safety risk and confidentiality issues that come with that. The other issue is that obviously we are in a business, usually 8 to 5. Right now, our mobile crisis is utilizing the campus drive unit 24 hours a day, and so there's a problem utilizing that building during business hours. So in the instance when we did have the warming center, I believe it was New Year's Eve 2 years ago, in 2060 Campus Drive building, it was very difficult to get everyone out in the morning. We had a lot of confidentiality issues in our small lobby area with our visitation program that comes in for Child Protective Services, as well as our behavioral health clients that are coming upstairs for med services and other services immediately at 8 a.m. So it really creates just a transitional issue specifically during the week, but also 24 hours a day for safety and protection.
Thank you. While we're talking about this, I would also like to address the multiple conversations we've had at the COC meetings, specifically the last meeting regarding alternative conversations about warming shelters, whether they were mobile, static type. But at least we were in conversation about trying to figure out other alternatives for this. We did discuss a mobile option. We did discuss a more static option, whether it be a transitional type of a structure. So you might maybe address that as well.
Do I commend the COC, specifically the city of Yreka and Chief Gilman, for his inspirational thinking outside the box, literally. Contemplating bringing in some kind of mobile trailer that could be utilized and brought into the areas, which would increase access for those in our homeless and unhoused areas and populations within his jurisdiction. He was talking about some type of trailering situation, 18-wheeler with heating situations, those type of things. Obviously, there's liability, insurance, heating, all those things to think about. But it did take away the burden of finding a location, somebody's building, those type of things. He was also thinking about sanitation of that facility would be easier, and those just those logistics that come with it. So there was a heated, long discussion at COC meeting this last month, and I think it was productive. It got everyone thinking that there doesn't have to be a building or a county building or a church that steps forward. Obviously, those are kind of the easy solutions. If we knew we had so-and-so church available every time, we could call. But for example, when we used the Methodist Church, they generously opened their doors numerous occasions for us in warming centers, and a lot of our population couldn't get there. They don't have the transportation. It was in a snowstorm. People weren't willing to even come out of their houses during those snowstorms or off the streets. They would not leave their belongings if they were part of the unhoused population to get across town. We did arrange some transportation, but it limited the number of people that could utilize it. So if we had some type of unit that could go out and assist the community or even travel throughout the night to provide periodic warming, a couple hours at a time type of situation, because these are not shelters, they are warming centers. They're meant to be temporary. They're not necessarily meant to be sleeping situations. It would perhaps help. So the city was a large advocate in that during those last conversations.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I understand the county's responsibility in the unincorporated areas, but can someone educate me on the state law regarding incorporated cities and their responsibility for this?
Why are you backing up? That is actually a fantastic question. So, we have Trish Barbieri, the director of social services, that you'd be able to answer that direct question.
I'm hoping so. I'm just returning after a 3-week vacation, so please bear with me here if I seem a little bit scattered. But as you are all aware, we are all disaster service workers, county employees as well as city employees and other jurisdictions. And as a courtesy to the county, HHSA, primarily behavioral health and social services, have assisted with the operation implementation, operation, maintaining, as Ms. Davis described, with the cooling centers. And I'll just clarify, we don't call them, as Mr. Valley mentioned, we don't call them shelters. Shelters are often full scope. We are mandated by statute, we being social services, to respond to declared disasters, but not centers. There's a difference. And so that's why I mentioned that it's really been a courtesy. We have never invoiced the city or the county, I will just say, for any sort of time or service that's been provided. It is my opinion that the services that are provided at the cooling centers are not specialized services. There's no specialty to them. Oftentimes, you know, we hear, social services, they do the emergency shelters. We do. And there's a specialty to that. And we do it in collaboration and conjunction with the American Red Cross. But when operating cooling centers or warming centers, there's no specialty to that whatsoever. Mr. Bailey mentioned there's no overnight, or, you know, we don't put out any beds or things of that sort. We often will issue blankets, and we've had food donated and things of that sort. And the only way that we are able to fund it is to actually track the time that the employees spend there and charge it to our public assistance programs. And so we have our staff actually taking brochures and pamphlets and boards of different sorts to promote the programs that we administer, because that's what we're mandated to do. That is the service that we're mandated to provide. We don't have any sort of discretion in terms of utilizing or realignment funds any differently and outside of the scope of the programs that we administer. And so tying it to that work is really critical for it to be paid. As we all know, I'm not aware of any center or any adverse weather event where we've operated a cooling center or a warming center where a disaster has been proclaimed. And so there's no opportunity for us to recoup our funding any other way unless we just treat it like a normal work day, which, as Mr. Bailey mentioned, is very complex because we're already operating business, normal business, between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m., and we have two 24-hour emergency response units set up for mandated services, for child protective services, adult protective services, and also family urgent response systems, the first system that we're mandated to operate. I will just say that it's a challenge oftentimes. It is a challenge, not only for all the reasons that I've mentioned, but also because of staffing issues. We seek volunteers, and we don't always get volunteers. You're asking staff who have already worked maybe a 10-hour day, an 8 or 10-hour day, to work a shift from, what are the shifts, Susan? 8?
Typically 7 p.m. to midnight, and midnight to 7 a.m. Mm-hmm.
And then they have the responsibility to go back to work the next day to do their regular job. It's a challenge, for sure. It is a challenge.
So I understand your role. I'm still trying to sort out the city's role. And it's important to me to know, before I would ever commit additional county personnel or financial commitment to something like this, I want to know, if I'm going to jump into somebody else's pool, I want to know what pool I'm jumping into. Basically, I don't think I do know that at this point. The other thing, from my perspective, is that I've never had a request personally or been reached out to by either one of the incorporated cities in my district for such a shelter. I know Mr. Shinoni and I have been working on some evacuation shelters for emergencies regarding natural disasters and that kind of thing. Trying to use the Grange and those kind of things, and the feeling in general is we don't want a warming shelter here. There might be an emergency evacuation, but not a warming shelter. I am interested in what kind of services are articulated between the county and maybe a group drive and Happy Camp. They do a wellness center down there, and I do know they do meals and they do warm shelter things and that kind of thing too. Different situation. Mm-hmm. And it's also a county responsibility. It's not an incorporated city. So on there as well.
And I can also review the individual city's responsibilities. I know that, as mentioned, the city of Wairika have been having conversations with regards to their roles and responsibilities for the warming and cooling centers. And so I am not aware of a state mandate, unless Director...
Wait. It would help me, because I...
But that's something we...
Governments are always looking for money from somebody else.
Correct.
And before the county would fulfill that, I certainly want to know where those boundaries are.
Good morning, Board Supervisors. Brian Schoen, Director of Emergency Services. So to answer that question is basically its capabilities and what is overwhelmed. So standardized emergency management states that if a jurisdiction is overwhelmed or the resources have been burdened, then the next resource steps in, which would be the county. So one of the things that we have seen as throughout Siskiyou County is that when a warming shelter or a cooling shelter, and to be clear on that, the cooling shelters, we have had cooling shelters and we've had them during fires due to fire safety shutoffs, or due to, in the case of the Mill Fire, we had a long-running cooling shelter, but that was in conjunction with the agency, which at that point was Pacific Power, so that they funded that. And then we funded our side of it through California Disaster Assistance Act through the Mill Fire and one of our vendors. Cooling shelters are usually through the day. We only are through the hottest part of the day, and most all of our jurisdictions have either libraries that the community uses or set up a few of the churches that have already used that. Warming shelters tend to be a little bit different in the sense that, or warming centers, they tend to be a little bit different in the sense that they're going to be overnight, and we are going to have to find the location that best suits the area. But again, it's based off of the jurisdiction's ability to either fund it themselves or to have the personnel to do it. And what it's has come to us, so we can't walk in, and just like, and we've talked about this with local jurisdiction as well, I can't walk in during a disaster and say, hey, we're in charge now, unless it's requested by the local jurisdiction. So any of our incorporated cities, including our CSD, cannot walk in and say, hey, the county's here, we're gonna help now, until I've been requested to do so. And that is where I think that question that you'd asked, that so we're being asked there's a step being kind of skipped on that with the local jurisdiction just coming straight to the county. So, pending any questions.
Thresholds?
So the threshold, it's based off of, we have very liberal thresholds compared to a lot of the state of California and some of the other. For cooling, it's gotta be 2 to 3 days of wet and cold. So wind chill, it's a matrix that we use. And cold is one thing, but it's gotta be multiple cold for multiple days and multiple nights. With the inability to get warm, the biggest trigger is going to be wet and cold and wind chill. Freezing, quick to hypothermia, and then warm is multiple days without reprieve, morning into evening into daytime high temperatures.
I guess I should have clarified that.
Yeah.
Is there a threshold on number of participants?
On how many folks are visiting?
Well, you said a jurisdiction has to be overwhelmed. To me, overwhelmed means it's beyond your capacity.
Correct. And in my tenure here, going on 4 years, we have only had one other county or one other city request a warming center, and then quickly decided that they were just going to use a local church instead.
Yeah, in my mind, it's not an either-or thing. I think this is where we have to look at that partnering. We're the ones, county provides mental health services, social services, cities don't. Talk about staffing. Cities are not staffed to do anything more than the basics. Think your water, sewer, admin type things. And so it's me, willing partners that want to partner with the city, and how do we develop a plan moving forward? What's the criteria, and how is that set up? I personally don't think county buildings are set up to be the centers. I think you need to address that location. For some reason that comes to mind, and I'm just using Mariveca as the example, because I've not had an experience in my communities, Dunsborough City, Dunsborough, they need that. And you know, again, no boundaries. Our citizens of Dunsborough, that's including the county. City of Mount Shasta is including the county. They say they live in the zip code or whatever. But why not partner with the Fairgrounds? We pumped in our money. We bought that armory. Why don't we set up this is where if we have to do something, let's get people on board. And there is grant money out there through the state for homelessness and or other things. And remember, they close the highway, so I'm not worried about snow and these kind of things. We're talking about certain instances, the cooling things. I mean, that's a perfect location to have a cooling center. Why does it always have to be a county or a city? Let's get the community involved in that type of thing.
We've tried that.
Well, here's the other point. You know, cities are not staffed. We aren't well staffed to do this kind of thing. And I don't want to say we need to do the minimum. We just do the best we can with what we got. And that may be we can't do it at some point in time.
And so there has been moments where the staffing is just not there.
Mm-hmm.
We may have the building, but we just do not have the staffing. Yeah. I know myself, I know most directors have stepped in on those positions, but it's got to be a buy-in from both.
And I think that's where we need to partner. It can't be an either-or type of situation. And I try to find volunteers. We have an aging population here. We don't have a lot of people that are willing, and I'm not willing to have our employees work a shift, volunteer, and then come back and try to do a shift. That's not productive. That's not helping the cause. Anyways, those are some thoughts on that.
So when you talk about wet days, hot days, whatever, but is power out? Because most residents have power for heating or wood or gas or something, or cooling. They have some form of cooling. So are you talking about when those systems are down, that's a trigger as well or not?
That's only been a trigger one time in my tenure. Is Ben McLeod was out, and mm-hmm. McLeod handled it on their own. They opened up a warming center, which was one of the hotels. And for the most part, our housed population is fairly well equipped. Wood stove, heaters, mm-hmm. and they have that ability to continue themselves and be warm. It's the unhoused population that's going to be the most vulnerable in that.
So I guess let's cut to the chase. We're talking about the homeless population.
Yes.
We're not talking about residents.
Yes.
For the most part.
Yes. Okay. In my experience, there has not been everyone else as the community that's open to this coming to be the shelter.
Okay. Thank you.
So I think the goal, in my perspective, is not just catering to the homeless population, but to eliminate a crisis panic situation of trying to create a shelter, no matter whether it's warming, cooling, but to just have a plan in place for whether it's warming, cooling, fire, evacuation, whatever, so that when we have to have something in place, we have a plan.
Don't we already have that?
We have a sheltering plan, yes.
Yeah.
And we have an emergency operation.
We have a sheltering plan, but it's when we're talking about the warming and cooling centers, we don't have a formal adopted plan. And that is the goal of this discussion. So what I'm gathering, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that the board has a common thread of preference of not utilizing county buildings for a center, for warming or cooling centers, and formalizing some form of a plan for a role of responsibility, which that would be brought back to the board, but that's what we're seeking, is that kind of direction. So which helps us greatly. And it would be a situation where the plan would come back to the board for formal adoption, which would stipulate the process. Step one, city must contact county's OES to determine if the weather event meets the criteria necessary to move forward. And then you just kind of go down that list of, recently we had a situation where we were looking at a warming center. However, all of our staff were snowbound, so we couldn't assist with staffing. And so there's always that potential of, we may have the best intentions, but it may just not be a viable option because we don't have the staff. And that's typically what they're looking for, is the staff to assist. So, but that's what I'm hearing. So if, unless I'm wrong, I mean, we can definitely bring back, again, that plan. Director of OES has created that plan, but bringing it back to the board for adoption to make sure that everybody understands
what the county is willing to supply, or can supply.
So that plan has been written and it has never been adopted by any of the jurisdictions, and that we pushed it to the jurisdictions without adoption.
I'm saying it has to come to the board first.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The plan has been written, but
adopted and then.
Then
pending the board's wishes. Yes.
Yeah, because then what happens is that the board will adopt the plan. We would then send that out to the jurisdiction saying, this is our process. If you have a weather event that you are seeking a warming or cooling center, this is the process. If you require, if you are over capacity, this is the process that would require you to pull that trigger for potential assistance from the county. Or not. So that's why I'm saying, or not.
One of the things I don't want to lose track of is the logistics of pulling this off.
Yes.
When Scott Valley needs a warming shelter, you probably can't get there. Or when Happy Camp has an ice storm, you can't get there. So committing employees from the county offices here that have already worked 4 or 6 hours is just not reasonable.
I agree. I 100% agree. And hearing from those that work at the shelters and the host care, it's extreme. So yes, my focus is the employees, to watch for their welfare and their well-being.
Yeah. And if it's physically impossible to get there, it's often very hazardous.
Correct. And it's there, I believe that because the county has stepped up when asked, there may be a level of expectation that the county will always be able to provide staff. And that's where it gets muddy for me. And that's where I want to be able to have a clearly defined role of responsibility of what shall be done and what may be provided. The two contrasting. If that is the desire and pleasure of the board.
I'm okay with something along that nature, but I think that the jurisdictions would have to buy into it as well.
Mm-hmm.
If they do not buy into it, for instance, then it's...
Then they would not utilize that plan. Right.
You know, that's all I can say.
Right, then they would not utilize the plan.
You know, because I, you know, work... How do I say? There's enough going on with, you know... Is there skin in the game from the cities as well when we provide these, or is it, are we on our own?
Go ahead, Trish. We've been pretty much on our own. There have been some centers where I believe city council staff has volunteered their time.
The one instance I can think of, I think, was one of the fires, Bowles or Mill, probably the Mill that the city, we asked for a cooling center, but they opened up their community center.
Yes.
They helped, you know, and I think all we provided was the generator, potentially, I think, to keep that going. But short of that, I mean, both shoulders were at the wheel. But if it's just the county by itself, you know, that's problematic.
If I may, through the chair, I think that's where my thought is that they have to be a willing partner. It can't be an either or thing.
No.
And it has to be spun of what we can, what we're capable of.
Yeah.
And we have to be honest on that front. Now, resources can be, I don't know, the generator, the food, the water, whatever. I don't think we are ever going to have dedicated staff that we say, okay, we're just going to ship in a dozen people. That's never going to happen. No. So it's going to be defined of what we are going to do, what we can partner with and capable of, and clearly defined.
If I may, one of the limiting factors that we have seen across has been police presence. So we do in the ability to keep everyone safe, including our employees, the members of the community, having police presence is always is a mandatory. At first, we did use the sheriff until we had that buy-in, and then the jurisdictions have used police. But one of the concerns is the overtime, and then having just somebody. I mean, you're literally just sitting for 8 to 10 hours. That's always been a challenge because that is a high cost. So, and if that is the last one that we had, we couldn't get a police presence, so we called it because I'm not willing to put people in jeopardy at that point. So,
and that is
exactly
what I was going to say. It is a public safety issue as well as our own employees' safety.
Correct.
Yes.
I'm glad you brought that up because that was something I was just getting ready to say. So, isn't that the whole purpose of funding a homeless liaison officer? Like, this specific instance would be perfect for that because they're already a law enforcement official or retired. And, I mean, this capacity is what that's for, right? To accommodate the homeless. And we're already funding that.
Two.
So, I mean, it doesn't make sense to send, you know, social services staff and stuff in there when we're already funding two city positions that should technically be lined up perfectly for this particular instance.
And that's a very valid point to where that may be stipulated within the plan that, you know, police presence that is supplied by or administered by the requesting city. And if not, then the county is not able to assist. So that's definitely something we can stipulate.
Yeah, that would be one of the limiting factors is law enforcement.
Do you note it?
Okay, so.
I believe if I can just recap and state the takeaways is that we will go, staff will go back to the table and review the plan and have it massaged to include very clear directives as the process, the steps, the requirements, not only from the county, but for the requesting city, and then bring that back to the board for review and for adoption. If that is sufficient for the board, then that is the direction that we will head.
Nodding
heads? Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
But thank you very much for your time. Great. When do you need a quick break?
Yes, I'd love a break.
Okay. Short break.